The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Receiving this message.
We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 706.LK1237, certificate number 43576. Lazy Susans.
Oh, by the way, I was right about my maid. She's leaving to get married. How could you be so selfish?
I do sympathize.
You're squeaking around to simulate a spinning table.
Yeah, well,
you're the lazy Susan.
I'm a squeaker. I have a sister named Susan, but she's not lazy at all.
She's an industrious Susan.
She's an industrious Susan. We have a lot of the same cultural qualities, but very different personalities.
Cultural qualities?
Well,
same like, background.
Like, for instance, well, no, like, weirdly, we were talking the other day when it's time to do the laundry, sort the laundry. It turns out we do it in a very similar way, although neither of us were taught to do it that way by our parents. We had no instruction at all on how to do laundry, left to our own devices. But we, somehow worked out that we sort our laundry, fold it, and put it away in very similar ways.
Genetic determinism?
I guess so.
Or just the fact that everyone does their laundry the same and you're just now discovering this?
No, we were talking about it in the sense of watching other people sort their laundry and thinking like, why are you doing it that way? That's weird. And then we discovered, oh, wait, we do it the same way. But she has a mind that is very future fixated or focused. She's always thinking about the future, how things are going to turn out, what she needs to do between here and there.
And you're Mr. Be Here Now.
Well, I'm definitely not. I have no sense of the future at all. So, and never think about it. So, you know, for me, every day I wake up and I'm like, it's a whole mystery. And,
you're just Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah.
Everything's happening at once to you.
Those days when I have things to do, I'm like, oh, wow, I have a thing to do. But no, I had no.
So your phone calendar knows the future, luckily, or you would not be a functioning person?
Yeah, sort of. And even with a phone calendar, I'm barely a functioning person. But functioning in the sense of our modern times, I would be a perfectly functioning person if I lived on the edge of the forest.
Yeah.
And was just, kidnapping children as they tried to get through the forest.
But instead of having to drive children to swimming, you need a phone.
There's a lot. There's a lot to keep that all in
your
head.
So kidnapping children easier than raising them?
I mean, if they're walking along a forest path and you have a house made of gingerbread.
And you have a big bag.
Yeah.
What could be easier?
Very easy.
As long as they're smaller than you and smaller, crucially, than the bag.
Yeah, you didn't have to plan it, in other words. You're not like, oh, I'm going to sit out here all day and wait. You hear them coming because the children are noisy.
It's like me looking at my bird feeder.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll come. Maybe they won't.
Maybe they'll come. Maybe they won't.
You're hiding in a bush with your bag.
And as a Democrat, I'm kidnapping children all the time. It's one of the core values of the Democratic Party.
You need to extract their growth hormones.
That's right.
It's important to our ideology.
That's right. As part of our plan to control what people do and eat and drive and wear.
You really need a lot of children's hormones for that.
Yeah, just it keeps me up, right? It keeps me energized so I can put on my jack boots and go make ranchers have to live, squalid lives.
Follow agricultural regulations.
Yeah, that's right.
You'd have no energy for that if you didn't have child pituitary gland fucking you up.
Exactly.
I totally feel you here.
No, I'd be laying on my fainting couch.
I'm also a middle-aged man who needs a little pick-me-up.
Uh-huh.
And I still have a kid at home. Maybe I should be
No. You don't farm your own kids. You have to go to a cabin at the edge of the forest.
Go to a pizza parlor.
Yeah, or a pizza parlor.
Yeah. It's a good life we have.
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good.
Pretty good.
I realized recently that I was going to have to keep living in my house.
I'm sorry.
Well, it's all right. It's a fine house. But I had this idea like, oh, maybe I don't have to live in this house anymore. Maybe I should move into like one of those cool brick-walled loft apartments down in Pioneer Square like I had always intended.
Or assisted living. How old are you?
I know. I can live in retirement communities now.
Congrats.
Some of them. I could move to the Villages quite easily.
Play pickleball for the rest of your life?
Have a band in my garage and drink all day. But it turns out, because of the way the economy currently is, it's not a question of whether I could sell my house. I surely could. But I would just, because of interest rates.
Getting a loan.
No, the loan would be fine. It is that my mortgage payment would double.
Right.
Even to live in a two-bedroom condo in downtown Seattle would cost twice what it costs to live in my house.
So many people are stuck in the homes they bought when rates were low, and it's, I don't actually have that much sympathy, sorry.
No, it's not a huge problem.
Because it just means they got a really good rate, and now they're like, boo-hoo, I can't move.
Well,
because you got a really good rate.
It is, though, it's a little bit, for me, it was an eye-opener because...
you want to imagine that you have...
options.
Freedom.
But also, I bought my house at a time pre-pandemic when I thought, oh, I'm going to be doing a lot of entertaining and, maybe have six more kids. I don't know. I'm moving to the suburbs. And then I got here and through the pandemic, I was like, wow, the suburbs, not what I thought. And then after the pandemic, I'm like, wow, they didn't improve. The suburbs were already...
You didn't start inviting people over.
Well, and that's the thing, right?
The germs are gone.
Yeah, but my social life...
Have bridge night with the neighbors.
My career as a touring comedian kind of went away, evaporated. And so all the touring comedians who I expected I would be putting up at my house are either not touring or we don't talk anymore. So, yeah, having a house built for entertaining, not...
But you do performing again. Maybe you need to have more musicians coming through.
Man, I don't want those scuzzy people staying in my house. I didn't even want the comedians. I just wanted to be able to stay in their houses when I was in Western Indiana.
How many musicians would I have to have over at my house before the bloom was off the rose? And I was like, no more. Ted Leo, get a hotel.
The thing is, you're a nice person. You can accommodate. You have a room in the basement where they can be and not be in your face.
You have a spare bedroom.
Yeah, I do, but they'd be in my face. Anyway, the point being that that I realized, I have to live where I am. I have to bloom where I'm planted. I can't constantly be thinking.
You can't be escaping.
No, I'm not going to move to one of those stone farmhouses in rural France because I don't speak French and I don't want to live in the far away.
You might.
Yeah.
I think now you know you don't, right?
You know those Instagram accounts that show you farmhouses in rural France for 285,000 euros?
Yeah.
It's like... Boy, that seems fun.
What would Mr. Ripley do? He'd move there.
Yeah, but then you're the American who's walking around a town of 1,500 people in some...
And you'll always be l'American.
Yeah, the Massif Central, and you'd be like, comment allez-vous? And they're like...
Baguette, s'il vous plaît?
Get out of here.
What I think about this is, like, I don't want to be in the position... I asked a friend who's... parents are now wealthy and they're always traveling from place to place. And I said, I guess what I would worry about is using that as an escape, just to always have the next thing. So you never have to think about, is my life going well? who cares? Let's go to the Hamptons.
Exactly.
And she was like, oh no, that is 100% what they're buying. Like, yeah, that's what they want. Like, that's why you do that.
Yeah, I feel like that. And living in hotels, it would just be like, well, I've burned every bridge at this hotel. The bellhop doesn't like me anymore. Moving on.
Like, even just having a little place in the San Juans, which we love, I'm always like, I never want that to be my life. Like, pff, nothing going on here. Well, we could go up to the San Juans next weekend, I guess.
Right.
We haven't been to that restaurant in a while.
Nothing going on up there either.
That seems bleak.
Yeah.
To me.
And for me, I feel like half of my desire to live in the city is just to, like, go outside in the morning in a flamboyant outfit and go sit in a cafe with my legs crossed and have like a hat with a feather in it and have people go, what a quizzical fellow.
Do you drive up to the city limits now to do that, or can you find a Denny's here?
Well, there is nowhere in the city limits that's looking for that. No, I drive into town.
All the diners are gone.
Yeah. I drive into town, but, you know, it's Seattle. You can't wear a feather in your hat, so I just put on my...
You can.
Dumb work wear.
I don't know what the age is, but there's an age where you can be the jovial guy at the diner with a feather in your hat, you're getting close.
I'm on my way. It's true.
There's upsides.
I went into a cafe the other day with a friend, and it was one of those downtown cafes where there was every possibility that the person behind the counter was going to be not into us. And we walk up, and according to the signifiers, this person already wasn't into us. We walked up. Two guys in their 50s who used to be in really cool bands, and this person
was already rolling their eyes,
giving us the like, ugh. And the first thing I say when I get to the counter is, can I see your shoes? And they lift up their, I mean, and my friend winced because this could be the beginning of them saying, like, yeah, hit the bricks. But they gamely lifted up their boot and said, why do you want to see my shoe? And I said, I have a theory about shoes being part of the language of the city in a way that is not true in the suburbs. People do not communicate with their shoes the same way in the suburbs as they do in the city.
If this was me, by the way, I'm already out. No tip is going to make up for this crap.
And the person behind the counter, intrigued, said, what do my shoes say? And I said, well, I think that I know more about you now that I've seen your shoes. And then they said, may I see your shoes? And I lifted my shoe up, and they were like, aha. And I said, see? And then they said, maybe we don't understand the language of suburban shoes. And now my friend, who was wincing, was like, how did we get here?
We dodged a bullet.
And we haven't even started talking about our coffee order. So this is what I want in the city. I want... Because if
you
I
want
said
strangers to annoy,
yeah. If I said, because I'm my father, yeah. I'm like, hey, what are you doing? Hey there, how are you? What grades did you get in school? But if I said that to a barista out here in this, well, it's still the Seattle suburbs, so they'd take the bait.
Maybe they'd play along.
Maybe, but further out further out, all the baristas are in bikinis.
Well, in America, the further out, the more likely you are to get in a place where somebody just wants to gab, or there's a social expectation
that's right.
Maybe you need to move to the country,
except,
my friend.
Except they'd be wearing Crocs or something else, right?
I mean, I see. You want the stylishness of knowing I'm a city person, but you want all the gab
of being a country
of a small town.
Yeah, but I feel like the gab is there. Everybody's so like just bored now. You can't just be bored all the time.
Mm.
You have to every once in a while. A dad comes in and asks you about your shoes, and you have to say like, okay.
I'll get off my phone for this.
Fine. Briefly. I'll do this shoe thing with you, old man.
Let's do the shoe bit.
And then we all, you know, at the end, it's just hugs. We're big tips.
You guys still write?
Yep. It's great.
Christmas card.
But in deciding I was going to live in my house, I realized that part of dressing like a foppish old fellow with a feather in his hat is that I still, despite having sold a bunch of clothes on eBay and clothes, so many clothes, because they're also a language,
mm-hmm.
I realized I just don't have the closets for all the clothes.
You can't fit, but doesn't that mean you have too many clothes?
Yes, it does, but...
Because you can't also wear that many clothes.
You certainly can, sir.
Once a year.
No, well, no. Yeah, I mean, you have the clothes for the appropriate events, and maybe... Let's say in the old days, 5 years ago, there were a dozen times throughout the winter that I needed a tuxedo because I had arrived at a certain station where I was going to parties where tuxedos were. And they could be fun tuxedos, but tuxedos. And then I needed a couple summer tuxedos. And if you go to the same parties, you don't want to wear the same tuxedo as last year.
No, that's your expectation. The last one you created. Maybe the hosts would prefer a tuxedo. Maybe they wouldn't. I got to say, they don't care that much if it's a fun tux, and they certainly don't care if it's the same one you wore 2 weeks ago to the other party.
But that's the problem, right? Those are
guys, it's a cage of your own making.
They're in rental tuxedos or whatever. You need a blue velvet one. You need one with – anyway –
you absolutely do not. I can help you here.
But this is, you know, my house was built in the 50s at a time when closet space was not the...
Right.
That was not the idea.
Remember, you'd buy a house and it would have like 8 inches of a single closet pole?
Yeah.
Pole? That's not what it's
called. A closet pole.
Yeah, a closet pole.
Closet rod.
A rod. Thank you.
Yeah.
They had done the measurements and they decided each American needed about 8 inches of rod.
Right. Yeah. You had 6 shirts, including your work shirts.
Some of them are out.
And then you had 4 pairs of pants, 4 slacks that you put on your slackerator. And you had a tie that matched each pair of slacks, brown, blue. It's
probably on the same hanger.
The other brown. So there just aren't enough closets, even in a home that I live in all by myself.
I'm old enough that the invention of the walk-in closet to me seemed like an incredible luxury. When my grandparents put a little extension on their house and they had a walk-in closet, I was like, if you can walk in, it's not a closet.
Yeah,
it's a room.
Yeah, it's a bedroom that you.
It's
you
a second room, but it's for your clothes.
You could have another kid because advances in modern medicine means that the little one doesn't die, and you got to have a room for it.
So, like, to me, it's still just an unimaginable world that anybody has a walk-in closet, including me, because I do now. I'm part of the problem.
Yeah, I have never had a walk-in closet, but what I did was I went on the internet, and I said, what does one do? And
did you ask AI?
I said, dear AI, dear my friend AI.
I don't have enough closets, Alexa.
Dear Chatty G, can you tell me what to do? But what I settled on was a clothes rack that you might find in a laundromat, on wheels.
Like it's a single rod on wheels?
A single rod, and then I realized that they make them with 2 rods.
This is very show business.
Like, one up, one down.
This is what my clothes come on.
Yeah, somebody's
when I'm working,
wheeling through a Las Vegas kitchen with one of these.
Martin Scorsese Steadicam shot.
Uh-huh. Covered with tuxedos and sequined gowns.
Exactly.
And I said, wow, I could have it on wheels and I could move it around and it could be over here and then it could be over there. And because of modern capitalism, you can buy anything now. And almost anything you buy is cheap. Yeah, cheap to buy and cheaply made.
There must be a ton of these sitting around.
Yeah. There are a
Did
lot
you buy
of
an old, cool, used one or just some?
I thought about an old, cool, used one, but, you know, Seattle did not have as big a garment district as a lot of other big cities. Mm. We had a small one.
Mm.
But you couldn't. I mean, if I lived in New York, I bet I could find these right. Just sitting out on the sidewalk. But as it is, I ordered a contemporary one, but one that was, you know, well made. Made for the trade. And you can Google these as garment racks.
I did not know what to call them.
Garment racks. But there's a fancy name for them too, which is étagères.
Oh, yeah. You see it in crosswords sometimes. Yeah. This is my experience because it has alternating vowels and consonants.
Mm-hmm.
However, I could not have told you what it was. It's just does an étagère have to be a wheeled one or is it just any
the wheeledness of it? And in France, étagère was more like a wheeled shelf than it was necessarily a garment rack.
Yeah,
the garment rack came
like
later.
I'm picturing like I'm in the Met and there's like a cabinet that's called an étagère.
Yeah, or you know, in your living room you just have like a movable feast. And that is what it kind of transitioned into the if you think about like the pastry cart that comes around at the end of a meal in a Michelin starred restaurant where they have a little selection of pies.
Or like the room service cart.
The room service cart is another is another, but
cousin.
I think that it started more in dining rooms, and very much a kind of like maybe an obvious innovation, but one that really only dates to the 18th century. I mean, there are references to étagères in the 17th century, but it became sort of more. Maybe it got imported to the UK.
They must have gotten better when wheels got better. When did we invent those kind of
little swivelly,
heavy-duty swiveling shopping cart wheels?
Ball-bearing wheels.
Yeah, because those are kind of a game-changer. If you're trying to push out a dessert cart for Louis XVI and you've just got round wooden wheels on it, it's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, they really are. You still see those carts where only two of the wheels swivel and the other two are straight, and even those are bad to maneuver.
Maybe that's why shopping carts are bad.
Shopping carts are bad.
Because there was always the joke about how shopping carts have one weird wheel going.
Yeah, right.
And I think it's because only the two front ones swivel, maybe.
But if you have a cart that has four independently swiveling wheels and you're trying to take it through a supermarket, it's bonkers. You can't steer it, right? It's all over the place.
Right. You can go any direction you want.
Yeah, and
you can go sideways.
It will start drifting. It'll be like Fast and Furious. Yeah.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
A lot of what popularized the étagère as a piece of furniture in the dining room was that even in the 18th century, it was already hard to find good help. And as as a middle class grew, typically you had servants who were bringing out your food, bringing it around the table.
Oh, it's a manpower issue. Yeah. If everybody has a tray, you can replace six guys with one guy pushing a cart. Is that the idea?
That and also I think there was, in terms of it being a class issue, there's a lot of writing in the 18th century about how intransigent your staff is. Like,
it's so hard to find good help.
Yeah, they're so difficult to deal with and so just lazy it's basically easier to serve yourself than it is to employ the staff that you would typically require if you had eight people over for dinner. So there was a growing fashion for using wheeled carts to replace some component of your serving staff. Not all. You'd still have a butler, a cook, and and a handmaiden, but not four people serving.
Because that's what you'd at table. You'd have multiple people serving
right. The
same thing to your group, whereas now one person goes around the table with a cart. It's probably a little slower.
Well, It's a little slower, but, you know, at the same time, you can help yourself from the cart. If you get over the fact that someone's going to put your consommé down in front of you, like the cart can go and you can take the plate yourself. And these devices, these carts and serving vessels were all called dumbwaiters.
Oh, literally. Like a waiter, but it can't talk.
Yeah, that's right.
I like how that really puts up front what people don't like about their servants. What if they said something?
Yeah, right.
That would suck.
Well, and, you know, they're back in the kitchen gossiping, like a dumb waiter.
He's deaf and dumb to your household secrets.
And that's the other thing. Sure, that dinner table conversation was privileged, and you have the walls have ears situations where the upstairs, downstairs crowd is gossiping about your middle-class business.
If you've got the evil footman from Downton Abbey, he's conniving.
He's conniving.
He's got something in the back of his evil little mind.
And in the American mythos, Thomas Jefferson figures prominently as someone who was very interested in new technology and very interested in new household technology.
Yeah, don't they say that if you go to Monticello? They're like, this is where he invented the dumbwaiter. This is where he invented the swivel chair. Is any of that true?
Well, he did outfit his house with all these modern conveniences. And he had dumbwaiters which were kind of built into the side of his fireplace. And they would bring bottles of wine up from the basement. And by bring, I mean that there was a enslaved guy in the basement and one at the top of the stairs who would lift it up with a rope, but you could open this door in the side of the fireplace and there would be a bottle of wine.
So it's really like he doesn't even care about the labor thing. He's got unpaid. Thomas Jefferson famously had a ton of unpaid labor at his place. What he just wants is kind of the modern thrill of, look what I have.
Well, that, and he's trying to introduce this to all of his guests, particularly when he's president, particularly when, you know, all these luminaries are coming to Monticello. He's saying a version of the 19th century, like, this is sanitary, this is technological, like, we could all be doing this, and in a way, this can do away with servants, and this is the future, right? We're not living in old England. We are the new land with the new science.
All the new ideas.
And he did. He had his dining room door between the dining room and the kitchen actually rotated from the center, and it had...
How can a door rotate?
Well, you know, it's like center? It's like...
Like a revolving door in a hotel lobby?
Yeah, it swivels on a central axis. And on the kitchen side, it had shelves that the kitchen could put the food on, then the door would spin, and then the food would all be there.
No one has to come in and out. It's just your servant, or in his case, enslaved person on the other side, is taking the stuff off.
Yeah, and it's kind of equivalent to passing the food through a pass-through in a diner, except, you know, in this way you never have to look into the kitchen.
You have one of those windows, right? The food from the kitchen to the... No? No.
My house would be the era for that, right. But the man that built my house was a humble Boeing engineer who did not believe in anything that wasn't efficient and the cheapest possible version.
He didn't entertain much.
Well, and also his wife, I feel like, absolutely asserted herself in the construction of the house, because the relatively small kitchen had two pocket doors, one on either side, where she could completely close herself off to the world.
Get away from that guy.
And the household business could be happening, and she had her sanctum sanctorum.
I mean, luminaries always like the, you know, the appearing food for my guests thing. This is something I'm supposing based on going to some Schloss in southern Germany where King Ludwig had a setup where, like, the table would descend through the floor and then come up with food already on it. Have you seen one of these layouts?
Yeah.
So if you're like a lavish Bavarian monarch, this is the kind of thing you want. I'm sure it's the Jeffersonian version of it is like so, you know, the shelf turns, dessert appears.
Yeah.
It's a little trick.
And the Germans were playing this game, and for sure the dumbwaiter that comes up from the basement, not bringing a bottle of wine, but bringing a whole tray of food.
Yeah.
You saw those appear in Germany and in the States. And this is, you know, it requires that the kitchen be in the basement. So you can imagine
right.
It's a style of architecture.
It's all, the kitchen was always on a different floor from the from where the food would be served.
Yeah. Yeah,
for a long time.
For a long time.
So you needed some elevator-like thing.
So by the 1840s, the name dumbwaiter was extended then to include these devices like the elevator going up and down. And dumbwaiter was kind of a universal term for all these different
labor-saving serving contraptions.
And Jefferson had it so that the kitchen would transfer the meals to wheeled carts, and each person sitting at the table would have their own little wheeled cart that had all of their, ooh, and they could sort of serve themselves.
You're flying business class.
And Jefferson, another thing he had was that when he would have a bunch of people over, he had multiple round tables instead of one giant table. Mm. And then when he wasn't serving a whole room full of people, they could fold them up and move them to the side. That kind of folded round table that actually pushes to the wall.
Church potlucks always have.
Yeah, he was really into that. But along with all of these innovations, there sort of was also the rotating serving tray that came into the dining room sort of as it's unclear when the first one really appeared.
Like it's not already, you're saying it's not already on the table, it's brought in like a cart or it's wheeled or something?
Well, it's the dessert tray.
Yeah.
You know, the little birthday cake style dessert tray, but it spins. It's on some kind of ball bearings.
That was the first revolving serving thing.
Yeah. And it wasn't really until the late 19th century. Like the dumbwaiter that goes up and down through floors, although it starts to appear in the mid-1840s, it's only patented in 1883. A guy by the name of George W. Cannon.
Oh, that's funny.
Got a couple of patents for...
Castles didn't have them. This is
right.
The 19th century stuff.
A dumbwaiter that, because a dumbwaiter, that technology so poorly executed would be a rattling and dangerous, a fire hazard, that fire could travel between floors. And if any component of the pulley system broke, or if the butler pulling the food up let go, or the food would go crashing down. And right. So George Cannon's dumbwaiter became a kind of a sign of a modern house. And pretty quickly it started being appropriated as a laundry service. You know, the house, the dumbwaiter was now moving stuff all around the house.
Because it's easier than carrying stuff up and down the stairs.
Right. But the Lazy Susan, which sits on the table and rotates, was a thing that only appeared really toward the very end of the 19th century, and appeared initially kind of as an American invention.
Really?
Now, it's attributed, we often talk about the origins of the Lazy Susan as being something that came from Jefferson's home.
Yes.
And the story is that he had a daughter named Susan, and she was either lazy or late to dinner. And the Lazy Susan would enable her to be served at the end of the table without her having to
be on time.
Be on time or get up and serve herself.
This seems like easy to fact check. Did he have a daughter named Susan?
He did not.
Oh.
And
she should be called the Lazy Sally Hemings or something.
And he also he did not have Lazy Susans on his dining room table.
Because as you're saying, it's 100 years later.
Yeah. And the origin of the Lazy Susan at one point was attributed to our friends in the Oneida community.
Really?
That the Oneidans developed it as a way to serve food in an egalitarian fashion.
They're like, people love the Shakers and they can't even have sex. We have lots of sex. What can we do to compete with them? Furniture.
Well, and everybody, you know, it's the King Arthur and the Round Table philosophy, right? There's no one at the head of the table.
I see that. So you wouldn't have had the Round Table anyway because it's too democratic. Like the reason why you have a long table at a party is because there's somebody at the head of it.
Right. Mm. And having everybody, you know, you're seated at a long table by rank.
Right.
The original patent for what we think of as the large Lazy Susan that sits on a table was granted in 1891 to an inventor named Elizabeth Howell, who was...
Girl boss?
She was. Like, at a time when there weren't very many patents granted to women.
Right.
She was from Maryville, Missouri. And she patented the self-waiting table, which was kind of an initial success. And she went on to...
The servants can put the food on, or you can put the food on and leave.
And
you have all the benefits of servants without having to pay them.
Yeah, right. You spin the table and the gravy comes to you.
Yeah. Was it déclassé to just pass stuff the way everybody else was raised doing? You weren't supposed to pass stuff down?
Well, you know, that's, I think...
Is that too middle class, I guess? If you have aspirations of wealth?
Interesting to think about, but I imagine that there's some of this that is also a novelty, and like you said before, some of it also contingent on ball bearings and good ball bearings.
Oh yeah, I guess there's really no way to get a Lazy Susan to work without the ball bearing.
Well, or work well,
which was invented when,
like, you'd use whale oil to lubricate it.
Yeah, that's not going to hold out for long.
No, and also it's like stinks up your food.
Ball bearings not patented until 1794, and it's true, they probably took a while to get good.
And took a while to, get in the home.
When's the first time you ever saw Lazy Susan on a table? You got a story?
Well...
Did you have one at home?
No, we did not. Well, in a way we did. I guess I'll get to that, because I think you'll see how they became popular enough that we all know what one is.
I mean, is it going to be the thing, I think, which is a Chinese restaurant?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's the first time I ever saw one. And this was not in the U.S. Like, it was like a Korean Chinese restaurant, and I had never seen a Lazy Susan before.
Right. And there is some, you know, there's a lot of, well, I'll cover that as we get closer to that in time.
I apologize for jumping ahead
to
the Chinese. I'm just hungry.
Elizabeth Howell also... then invented the garment stay, and that was what really made her famous.
Is that some kind of undergarment?
Yeah, it was like it replaced whalebone corsets.
I see.
But the first time the name Lazy Susan actually appears wasn't until 1903. There was a Boston Journal article about a carpenter by the name of John Laurie who had built one of these as a special order for a customer. And the story appeared in the newspaper as a kind of anecdote about like a humorous anecdote about a disagreeable customer, and the Scottish carpenter had something Scottish to say. But it was the first time it was described on record as a Lazy Susan.
And there's probably no eponymous Susan. It's just kind of a generic... Serving girls' name?
Serving girls were known as Susans.
Oh.
And there three or four...
It's like a Karen?
Yeah.
You're such a Susan.
Three or four competing sort of sources for the derivation of that. But a Susan wasn't just a serving girl, but kind of a...
It was a Karen. It was like a...
Yeah, a little bit of a Karen, like a serving girl that you had to kind of mind. And... Again, by the 19th century, by the late 19th century, it was an era where servants were somewhat prevalent in modern homes.
Yeah, middle-class people would still have somebody serving dinner. They might have a cook and a housekeeper.
But also, like, modern convenience. I mean, it was a sort of a class thing, both to have servants and also have the technology to replace them.
That's what you want.
That's right.
I have you, but I don't rely on you. You rely on me. You could be replaced by a ball bearing at any time.
And these then became very fashionable early 20th century conveniences. And as you say, there's nothing really a Lazy Susan can do that just passing the gravy boat around can't. There's no reason.
You won't spill, I guess.
Yeah.
You don't have to hoist. It's not, maybe it's not ladylike to ask some of your guests to pass the gravy boat. Yeah.
But they became popular enough that Henry Ford was well known to actually carry a giant Lazy Susan with him.
What?
When he went camping and on trips. Like he, the Lazy Susan.
Somebody's job was to put it on the folding table.
Yeah, the key element of a Henry Ford meal was his big Lazy Susan that he carried everywhere.
I'm sure he wasn't carrying it, but yes.
Right. He wasn't carrying it.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
After World War I, they fell out of fashion. They were seen as kind of anachronistic, like, oh, some sort of 19th century. I mean, they had... Because they came from this long line of étagères and dumbwaiters, by 1918, we were living in a modern world. And
I mean, the servant class kind of collapsed. So maybe there was no expectation that you would, you know, now everybody passes the peas.
Yeah, and kitchens became modernized so that it wasn't necessary that you have a staff make food. You could have a stove and all mod cons, electricity. And so that kind of thing fell out of favor. And so by the interwar years and by the end of World War II, that whole style of dining and entertaining had passed. But then in the early 50s, out in San Francisco, there was a man by the name of Johnny Can. K-A-N.
Johnny Can. Yes, he can.
And he was part of a community of second and third generation Chinese immigrants who were living in, or, you know, sons and daughters of mm-hmm. people who had come from China, who were living in San Francisco. And at that point in time, Chinese food around the United States was considered like a kind of fast food and a garbage food, and mostly chop suey, which is sort of a American bastardization of Chinese noodles.
There were already the jokes about how you'd be hungry again.
Yeah.
Mostly because it was the only place you can eat where the meal would be vegetable-based. Like, it wasn't a big cut of meat. It was vegetable sauce with some small strips of meat. And today that's a million types of food. But everything. Back then that was like... a novelty, so people were like, this doesn't stick to your ribs.
Yeah, it's something you would eat out of a cup. You know, it was not it was not an affluent food. There was no nice Chinese food. let's say, in American popular culture after the war. But Johnny Can set out to kind of change that vibe and opened what was his restaurant, Johnny Can's, in San Francisco. And I, forgive me if it's pronounced Khan.
I don't know.
K-A-N.
It might be up to him.
Might be up to him.
It's probably Johnny Khan if he's in China. I don't know how he said it.
Is Johnny Khan closer than Johnny Can in the sort of Chinese way?
I would think so. But you know, there's plenty of Yan saying Yan, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's probably up to the individual Chinese American.
Well, in 1953, he opened his eponymous restaurant. And the idea was that he was going to turn Chinese food into a cuisine, or present it as a cuisine, present authentic Chinese food, not as a Americanized, you know, trash food, but as something that
it's authentic. It's authentic, and it's also fine dining.
Fine dining.
Would the little hole in the wall places have been like what we imagine now of these kind of, you know, red shellacked palaces, or did he kind of invent the look of the Chinese restaurant?
He really started that whole genre where if you were a cool cat,
yeah,
you would go down to Chinatown and you would get this whole elaborate dragons and so forth. And also like the window into the kitchen, part of why we see windows on kitchens was so that people who were suspicious of Chinese food, he said, you know, you'd get six people in there and one of them would say, I'm not going to eat this weird Chinese food. I want a steak. And he would bring them to the window, show them how the food was prepared, show them how fresh and, you know,
a kind of transparency you would never get in a nice French place.
Exactly. Like, look, this is how the duck happens. This is how the food is made. And he said that was part of converting people into appreciating Chinese food as a real cuisine and not just a thing that a bunch of leftovers got put into.
Mindy's grandpa used to say he would never eat Chinese food because it was slick food.
Slick. Too much oil.
And maybe just the kind of the cornstarchy sauces. And it just struck him as not real authentic food in a way, you know. He needed the window. He was one of those guys who needed the window.
Yeah, right. And I think, you know, my dad, who didn't like stews or food where things touched, he always ate Chinese food and Japanese food, I think because growing up in Seattle and after the war, he just had that familiarity with it and thought of it as a fine food or a food that, you know, that had cultural cachet. Like, oh yeah, I eat Chinese
food. I'm cosmopolitan.
Yeah. And Johnny Can's or Khan's became like a must stop in place in San Francisco for all the Rat Packers and all the cool.
It's one of those places with the bar. Yeah. And
there is within the kind of apocrypha, not apocrypha, that's the wrong word, but in the backstory of the Lazy Susan, there was kind of retroactively an attempt to find some precursor of it in China because of its eventual ubiquity in Chinese food and in Chinese restaurants around the world. And there is a story about a Chinese doctor by the name of Dr. Wu, who as early as 1917, he was a Western educated doctor, and he went to a sort of health conference, then noticed in Chinese dining situations that at the time, yeah, people passed plates of food around and took food directly from the serving plate with their chopsticks, put it in their mouth, and then went back.
That's a big no-no.
And he was
I was at a place the other day that did the old style thing of the white and the black chopsticks. One is for your plate, one is for the serving plate.
And this was an innovation brought to us by Dr. Wu, who was the first to go back to China and say, listen, we need serving spoons. We need to, you know, not eat directly from the serving plate, but in fact bring it to your own plate, and then each person has their own chopsticks.
Do you remember how long it took Guns N' Roses to come out with Chinese dining situation?
Oh, that was a great, after their spaghetti incident.
Chinese dining situation. Yeah,
they went through the whole, every kind of different cuisine. I love their French Restaurant Academy album. And so he actually described a serving plate that rotated as part of his recommendations for greater hygiene in Chinese dining situations. But there's no evidence that anybody took him up on it. They weren't ever built or popularized.
Nothing ever rotated.
That's right.
He had the technology, but, you know, life gets in the way. It's the castle in the air. Lazy Susan in the clouds.
The real reinvention of the Lazy Susan happened at Johnny Khan's. I've now switched to saying Khan instead of Can.
What if it was Can?
Khan!
That's somebody thanking him for the delicious Chinese food.
Johnny Khan's friend, whose name was George Hall, although George was Chinese and had come over from China in his 20s, and had come at a time when there were immigration prohibitions on people immigrating from China and getting citizenship.
There were like exclusion acts specifically targeting Chinese American immigrants, right?
And so he changed his name to George Hall.
Oh,
as a
that was easy back then.
Kind of ploy to establish himself as, oh, no, I was born in America, like I'm part of an American scene. But Johnny Khan had a gang of friends that were investing in his restaurants and, you know, kind of prominent San Franciscans. And George Hall was a kind of a tinkerer and an engineer, and started a very famous soy sauce company called the Longevity Soy Sauce Company, which still makes soy sauce today.
Well, I would hope so with that name.
That's right.
You don't want to be a flash in the pan if you're Longevity Soy Sauce.
If you buy soy sauce at Trader Joe's, I think it's manufactured by the Longevity Soy Sauce Company.
Wow.
But George Hall, sort of independently, it's unclear if he was inspired by any 19th century Lazy Susans, but independently invented this circular serving centerpiece, or CSC.
There you go.
And installed it at this restaurant in San Francisco, Johnny's Restaurant.
Well, today it seems like a normal fit for it because you almost always order Chinese food family style, which at least when I was growing up was kind of a rarity at other restaurants.
Yeah,
right. It's more common in American dining today to order family style, but Chinese food you always would, and that means there's constantly
stuff moving around.
Everybody wants to try everything. You don't have just a plate in front of you. If that was uncommon then to serve family style at restaurants, I guess you can see why the Chinese cuisine would reinvent it.
And I think especially introducing family style dining to a hipster Western audience, this was kind of presented as part of the novelty of eating at Johnny Can's restaurant.
Even though it's not a Chinese thing, you associate it with that experience.
And so all these hipsters, all these Frank Sinatras and Marilyn Monroes, then went out into the rest of the country and said, hey, daddy-o, hey, cat, this is the, you know, eating Chinese food is the real deal. This is the way. And they...
It's the berries.
Uh-huh.
They say it's the berries.
This is the berries. This is the D. This is the gold D. And so the Lazy Susan became part of mid-century modern kitchen convenience. And the idea of rotating shelves and rotating platters was now part of a mid-century kitchen. But also, this restaurant in San Francisco became extremely influential within the Chinese-American community. And post-1960s, there was so much cross Pacific traffic between American Chinese and people back in Asia, mm-hmm. that the popularity of the Lazy Susan exploded in Asia and now is found everywhere in Asia and is, you know.
So the Chinese food that I ate off of a Lazy Susan table in South Korea in the 80s came from San Francisco back across the Pacific.
Yeah, it's the rare instance where what seems like an ancient invention like noodles or fireworks actually didn't come from China, but went the other direction.
It's more like the tooth fairy. It's newer than you think. The the only place I've ever seen one at a home. Have you ever been in a home that has like a cool mid-century modern table with a Lazy Susan? I don't know if any of my friends have one.
No, but every home I've ever lived in has had a rotating cupboard under the corner of your
right.
of your cabinetry.
That's true.
That is also a Lazy Susan.
I guess because it's hard. Otherwise, it's hard to get things out of the back of that cupboard.
But that wasn't part of kitchens. I think probably those corner cabinets were just inaccessible. Or yeah.
Too bad.
Where you put the stuff you never use.
Dusty waffle iron.
Which is kind of what a Lazy Susan also holds, all the dusty waffle irons.
My in-laws have a big Lazy Susan on their table, but I think it's by way of China. They lived in Asia for a long time, and I think they just got used to the convenience, and they were like, when we get home, we're going to have a big round table in the dining room, because you're locked into a round table. Very difficult to make a Lazy Susan work on a big rectangle table. You keep cutting off people's heads.
Right. Yeah, well, or the people down at the end are like, this isn't actually convenient.
I still can't reach it.
But, you know, I refer now at every Omnibus episode to my little Dim Summit
yes.
group. And in our favorite restaurant in Seattle's Chinatown, there are only circular tables. No, that's not true. By the windows, they're rectangles. But in the center of the room where we prefer to sit, there are circular tables, but there are four tops that don't have a Lazy Susan and six tops that do. And there are only four of us, but when we arrive, it's never full. The woman always directs us to a four top, and then we would say we'd rather have the one. And so now they do. Now they immediately take us to the six top.
As long as you order 1.5 times as much.
Oh, yeah, we do.
It seems like probably not a problem.
And it's really nice. You know, you put the teapot in front of you, and then you spin it around. It's still fun. Still fun.
And there can be, is there ever conflict? Because there can be conflict with a Lazy Susan. Like, I want the if I'm at Mindy's parents' house, it's, you know, there's often 12 of us eating around this giant, it's the biggest Lazy Susan I've ever seen. And I'll be like, I want the guacamole back. But while I'm doing that, somebody else is like, I want the cheese back, and it, you know.
Yeah, or you pick something up, and then the Lazy Susan moves away, and you're like, hey.
Where's the place for this?
Yeah, now that happens a lot.
I'm holding this in my lap.
But I think four people around a Lazy Susan is a lot easier than eight people around a Lazy Susan.
I think so, too.
The thing you want is never going to be in front of you if there's eight people.
But that makes it more fun, because no matter what you want, it's always like, all right, do you want to spin the wheel or solve the puzzle? I'm going to spin the wheel.
Yeah, well, and I think the onus then is on you to have everything be equally good. You can't put creamed onions out there with like petit fours.
You always want to have something good in front of everyone.
Yeah.
So they still might have to spin, but you're not moving a bad thing in front of someone
else. Yeah, that's right. Or the poor kid that like it goes that way and then it goes back around right past them over there and you're like, but and then it's gone.
Does it need a more sensitive name now? I think we understand that laziness does not actually exist. It's just some people have executive function issues.
Oh, I see. There actually have been a couple of articles that I read where people in our modern way, in our Instagram comment section way, have said, is this racist?
Oh, is there a black servant named Susan that we're...
Yeah. Are we disparaging some 17th century imaginary? And should we then... in support of this imaginary person, stop saying this word. And in the rarest of rare occasions, all the pundits who have replied to these queries have said, no, it's just...
We've run the numbers.
Yeah.
It is, in fact, not offensive.
Seems like most of the servants that were called Susan were white girls, probably Irish. And
well, you're off the hook.
You can't really... nobody's actually mad about this, so you can just go ahead and use the term.
That's good. That's a relief.
Yeah. Yeah. So now I'm going to call everybody that waits on me, Lazy Susan. I'm going to just call it right to her. Hey, what's up? Hey, Lazy Susan.
No, don't do that. Ask about their shoes. And that concludes Lazy Susan's entry 706.LK1237, certificate number 43576 in the omnibus. Don't look at the comment sections, but if you want something that's all comment section, in our time we invented social media for that.
That's true.
We were like, what if you could make the whole internet out of the comment section? And we came up with social media. For a time we were at Omnibus Project, at Ken Jennings, at John Roderick, at various installations around the internet. Just performance art. We weren't actually into it. Just like Tilda Swinton sleeping in a glass box. Sometimes we'd say things on the internet.
Well, where are you posting the most in?
Nowhere. I think Instagram soon, because I got a book coming out next year.
But you've stopped Twittering entirely?
I don't think I've been on Twitter in months.
Does that feel okay?
It feels so much better.
You used to have such a good time. You were so good on Twitter.
We had somebody was on Celebrity Jeopardy the other day, and he was like, I was really fan of your Twitter, and then you got hired on Jeopardy, and you couldn't be fun anymore. And I was like, well, that's kind of that's kind of how Twitter is, for an outlet for people who don't have an outlet. So I think you're right about that.
But also Twitter became really unfun.
Yes. And right around the same time.
You stuck it out. I mean, a lot longer than I did, but for you got kicked different off. Reasons I did. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Hey, you know what?
My principals and Elon told me, no, it was pre-Elon, huh?
Yeah, those are, no, it was, I got kicked off.
You got kicked off X.
Post-Elon.
But that's when it was supposed to be, all the free speech was supposed to start.
I know, but not for me. The bona fides that I will carry to my grave are, ultimately, I got kicked off of Twitter, whereas most of you had to, like, limp off of it.
Nazis were coming back,
yeah,
and you were getting kicked off. That's good. That's,
I was too feather good. In your cap. I was too good for Twitter.
Correct. So I think I'll be back. I'm on Blue Sky, which I like.
Do you post there?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. It's just mostly like just to kind of evoke a pre-successful Twitter. It's like when you go to Colonial Williamsburg. Mm-hmm. You just want to see how society used to be. Look how simple and quiet it is here.
Yeah, they're churning buttermilk.
That's why I like, but Blue Sky is the butter churn of it's the Little House on the Prairie of the social media world.
I post on Threads, but then if I venture anywhere further than just the people right around me, it's just another scoldy McScolderson
place
where it's like, I don't want to get scolded.
Don't go to Threads. So I'll probably be on Instagram at some point. Maybe I'll let Jeopardy run the account. I don't know. it'll probably be half and half.
But Jeopardy doesn't let you get all your witticisms out. I guess that's what this is for. I guess Omnibus is your Twitter.
This is Twitter now.
Yeah, you get to be funny someplace.
Except, not really. Like, Twitter, you'd actually be like, oh, I thought of a joke. I'll put it on here. You're never like, I thought of a joke. Let's do a podcast. It's always like, let's do a podcast. Maybe we'll think of a joke. And usually we don't. And it's still an hour and 15 minutes long somehow.
You always throw jokes in.
They're not actual jokes.
Yeah, sadly.
But I think you can fool people if it sounds like you told a joke.
You can fool some of the people some of the time.
That's right. And get them to Patreon you. Speaking of which, that's the best way to support Omnibus. If you enjoy the show, if not, why have you listened to this far into the outro? If you're listening this long,
you clearly enjoy the show.
You clearly enjoy the show enough to like to pony up a couple bucks. Why not? Go to patreon.com/omnibusproject. If you cast your bread on the waters there, it'll come back to you hundredfold because of all the early ad-free episodes, the addenda shows.
You know, one thing we could do, Ken, because I know a lot of people feel like, oh, I'm a Ken. And then other people are like, I'm a John.
Oh, we should have a contest.
If you support Ken, if you're more of a Ken and you think Ken is the better host of Omnibus, give $5 a month to our Patreon. But if you're a John, give $6 a month to our Patreon.
You're making it harder on you.
Well, I know, but the people that are Johns are like, yeah, I'm gonna go one more.
You just want an excuse when I kill you to be like, yeah, well, mine was a dollar more. So maybe it should be like, if you give an even number of dollars, you're a Ken; an odd number of dollars, you're a John.
Oh, okay, that's good. But then
all the $5 people,
yeah, they're gonna go down to four, and then you just threw $100 out the window.
They're gonna go up to six. They're gonna be like, I would never go down to 4. They're thinking right now, how dare he say that? I would go up to 6.
Right. I'm going or to even 12.
I still like Ken. I'm going to go to 7.
I'm going to give 11 for John and 12 for Ken.
Which am I again? Am I even or odd?
I thought, was that, am I even and you're odd?
I don't know. I think I said I was odd, but that doesn't make any sense.
We're going to have to, no, you're not that odd. We're going to have to standardize this because now if people give weird numbers, we're not going to know what they mean.
So what do you want? You call it. Do you want even or odd? Call it in the air.
I'm going to be odd.
Okay. John's the odd one. That makes sense.
Yeah, $5.
I'm square.
I'm going to take all the
$5. You just inherit all the $5 people. Yeah,
but you get the $10.
Yeah, but are there enough 10s and 20s and upward to make up for the $5 ones?
Oh, that's right, because everything above 5 is generally an even number.
Some people might give 25 or 65, 365.
I encourage you to give $365 a month.
A dollar a week. The cost of a McDonald's, nothing, probably.
Well, a dollar a week would only be $52
a day.
A dollar a day.
The cost of a McDonald's.
You can't get anything at McDonald's for a dollar.
What's a dollar at McDonald's? Nothing.
Nothing. I mean, I haven't been to a McDonald's in 35 years, and I don't even have a TV.
That's why I don't have Listeria. Yeah.
McDonald's.
So now we'll know.
In the
future, we will look and see whether odd dollar amounts or even dollar amounts are prevalent. We should look. I'm going to look right now to see that we have a baseline.
It says here, premium roast or iced coffee, any size at McDonald's is 99 cents.
There we go.
When using the McDonald's app.
Oh, see, we don't make you use an app. I mean, we kind of do because Patreon is a website, but.
Yeah. And of course, every McDonald's is different, but the McDonald's app? Come on. Come on.
How else is McDonald's going to track your thinking and purchases and movements?
The world has gone to total garbage.
My least favorite moment in my day is when I just try to use some website on my phone. I just look up a movie on IMDb. I'm trying to answer some question on Reddit. And look what happens. It says, but don't you want the IMDb app? No, I don't. You've been a website for over 25 years and it's fine. Yeah. I'm just going to use your website.
Don't you want to pay $99 a month to use the website?
Don't you want an app on your phone taking up space for every website you've ever been to?
None of this. None of this can survive, Ken.
But the show would not survive without good-hearted people supporting our Patreon. Patreon.com/omnibusproject is where to go. Remember, John is odd. I am even.
And I'm not going to require that you be good-hearted. You can be nasty. You can be a bad, bad person.
Not me. If you're bad-hearted, please go support the Dollop.
No, 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 no. If you're bad-hearted, stop listening to the Dollop and start listening to the Omnibus.
Do you think it'll make them better people?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the Dollop is just bringing you down.
Let us be the Jiminy Cricket conscience that helps you make better decisions in your life.
Yeah, even if
you're
evil.
You're not lazy. It's just executive function.
I mean, and I don't mean to say evil. That's a value judgment. If you're a sociopath, which is kind of, can be fun, No, you can't say somebody's evil.
I didn't hear that evil had been deprecated.
Yeah, you're too judgy. You're too judgy.
Only borderline personality syndrome remains.
Yeah, there's no...
Good and evil is... self-diagnosis.
What we used to call evil is now another form of neurodiversity.
But doesn't that mean good does not exist? What we used to call good is now what do you call it? When somebody's...
Yeah, good is normative and also white supremacist or supremacist.
What do they call it when somebody has they're hyper-vigilant about their own...
Attention deficit disorder?
No, about their own behaviors.
Parsimonious? No.
Something like that. You all know the word I'm thinking of.
Well, go with the word you think Ken is trying to use.
That's all good was. It was just a mental illness, it turned out. Find your other fellow futurelings online, wherever they congregate. They're a good time. Send us email to theomnibusproject@gmail.com if you can think of that word that I couldn't just think of. And send physical objects to P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington 98155.
Futurelings, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. But if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may have been our final word. But if Providence allows, we wish you many goods and cheese and hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.